Welcome to the You on the Camino de Santiago podcast, Season 4. This podcast is for and about people getting ready for their first ever pilgrimage on the Camino de Santiago in Spain, France, and Portugal. With your host, Camino guide, and longtime pilgrim, Nancy Reynolds of the Camino Experience. Hola, pilgrims. Nancy here, coming to you from Nájera on the Camino Francés. I've just arrived back to the Camino, and I have about a week before I head in the direction of Saint-Jean-Pied-du-Port to meet my May Camino Experience group. I will be walking from Nájera to Burgos over 6 days, taking it nice and slow to enjoy the journey and to catch my breath after the busyness and swirl of counting down to travel and getting the podcast set up to run smoothly while I am on the Camino. So by that statement, you can guess that this episode was edited and queued up before I left home, thanks to the magic of technology. I am considering doing some live from the trail conversations while I'm here, but full disclosure, I am usually so wrapped up with being in the moment on the Camino that I forget where I put my lapel microphones. We'll see what happens. I will be sending out weekly emails to my email list with photos and stories from the trail. In case you've just found this podcast, I will share that the purpose of this series is to inspire, empower, encourage, and prepare first-time pilgrims to go after their dream of walking the Camino de Santiago. If you are jumping in with this episode, you may want to go back to Season 1, Episode 1, for the start-to-finish storyline. And either way, welcome to the podcast. And if you'd like to learn more about the Camino Experience, I'll invite you to stop by my website, thecaminoexperience.com, and look for the section called About the Camino. What I love about hosting this podcast is that I get to meet pilgrims from around the world and give them a platform to share their stories. In this episode, you are going to hear from John from Canada, who will be walking the Portuguese route in May. As you will hear, John is looking ahead to his next decade and pondering what that will look like. We talk about some practical considerations, such as the debate between taking a rain jacket or a poncho, if you really need trekking poles, and what to do if your walking pace is different from that of the person you're doing the pilgrimage with. We also touch on some more contemplative topics, like how to embrace whatever the Camino throws at you, how to make the journey significant, if it truly is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity? And what does religion or spirituality mean at different times in our lives? I hope you enjoy this conversation as much as I did. Let's go ahead and meet John. John, hi. Thank you so much for being with me on the podcast.
Yeah, I'm really glad to be here. I've been listening and kept on getting a nudge every time it said, you know, just send us your email if you want to be interviewed. And finally, I thought, I better.
Oh, I'm so glad you did. And, you know, you got in right under the wire because I actually have pretty much filled up Season 4. But anytime a notable story comes across my email box, I'm like, oh, how am I going to fit that in? And what captured me, well, we're going to see what captured me about your story. It's who you are walking with and what this is all about for you. So really looking forward to that unfolding.
Oh, that's cool. That's cool. Well, I'll try to live up to all that.
Nothing to live up to. Just bring yourself.
All right.
Yeah. So let's start where I always start, which is to put the pin in the map. Will you share with us what route you're walking?
Right.
Where you're starting and where you're going to finish, how long you'll be out there.
That sounds great. So we're going to be starting in Porto, Portugal, and we're going to be taking 18 days to go to Santiago, and then from Santiago de Compostela to go to Finisterre. So it's sort of a dual goal, right? The Santiago, the cathedral, and all of that is an important goal for me. And then the Finisterre is a really important goal for my 17-year-old son, who's coming with me.
There it is. That's who you're walking with. Let's talk about that.
Yeah.
How did this come to be? How did it happen that you're doing the pilgrimage to Santiago de Compostela with your 17-year-old son?
Right. And for the first time. And so at first in my brain, this was an ill-advised idea. I've been thinking about doing the Camino for at least a decade. I've had a couple of different colleagues, friends who've done parts or all of the French Camino. And I've been thinking about it. And this past year, I thought, I think this is a year that I got to walk it. And okay. I think in the future, I want to do the full 800. Mm. And so I want to do something shorter now.
Okay.
And so I had planned, I'm going to do Porto to Santiago. I'll take 2 weeks. And as I was preparing, I started reading all kinds, you kind of get it in your head. You start reading every possible book and you watch the movie The Way and whatever videos you can find. And then I read this book. I think his name was Andrew McCarthy, called Walking with Sam.
Yes. Yes. I've heard of that book.
Right. Right. So Andrew McCarthy is from way back in the Pretty in Pink movie. He writes this book about how he went with his 18-year-old son, Sam. And so I'm just reading it because I wanted to read about the Camino. And at the beginning of it, you know, the idea of walking with your teenage son was confirmed. Like, it's a bad idea because his son is like, you know, how soon is the next airport? You know, this is really far. Why do we have to do this? And he just keeps asking these questions. But by the end of the journey, his son was like, this is the only epic thing I've ever done in my life.
Oh, wow.
So I was not thinking of inviting any. We have five children altogether. And we have the two youngest are boys, 21 and 17. And I really felt called to, I really felt like I think I need to ask them both. And so I sort of sat on that as, I think I'm about to interrupt my own Camino in order to invite the boys on it. It's going to be different, but bigger in some ways. And then I sat on that. And then I invited both my boys, my 21-year-old and my 17-year-old. And they both said, yeah, that sounds interesting. Neither one committed, right? I didn't offer to pay for it or anything like that. This is on your dime. This is what's going to cost. And you get to sleep with all kinds of people that snore and everything else. And
Hold on. You got to work on your sales pitch.
Yeah. You got to do the hard sell, right?
Right.
You make less promises up front.
There you go.
And so they were both quite interested. It turned out for the 21-year-old that he's moving back from Vancouver right around this same time. And so the timing was just bad. And he said, Dad, you're probably going to do this again. You're going to invite me again. So I'm going to put it off till another time. But even though his 21-year-old brother wasn't coming with, my younger son, 17-year-old Stephen, he was really eager to go. And so he's like, yeah, Dad, I'm in. And I'm like, yeah, you realize you're paying, right? Yeah, no, I know. And so he's coming with me and I'm pretty excited about it.
I love the way that unfolded.
Yeah. And you know, I'm a nice guy and everything, but I'm also a little bit selfish, right? So I was also thinking about, so what do I lose by sharing, you know, with somebody else? But I feel like I'm gaining so much because, you know, my son's coming with me. But there's a rhythm to that too, right? Because, you know, I said to him, I'm going to be wanting to get up like crack of dawn every day and just get an early start. And, you know, and he's like, yeah, you go ahead. I'll probably pass you around coffee time. So we might be doing a little bit of leapfrogging and we may be walking side by side a lot. We'll see. We'll kind of play that out as we go.
Oh, just, I love that you have had some of those conversations to think through what it will be like on the trail.
Right.
Because it's easy to get this romanticized image of what walking the Camino with your son would be.
Right.
And I hearken back to, well, what would a day in your life at home be like with your son? Would you be glued to each other at the hip or would you be at different paces and eating and drinking at different times? So yeah, to take those expectations and shine a light on them.
Right. Yeah. And I think in truth, like there's a lot of things that we would love to do lockstep together. And there's like times where it's like, we just love to have some space from each other. Right. And that'll probably be true on the Camino as well. And that's kind of how relationships work. Right.
It is, isn't it? Yes. Well, and I think that's really informative for people who are thinking about walking with someone else, whether it's a child or a partner or a friend or a cousin. Yeah, we have to think through what that experience will be like because it does change how you plan your days. It does change perhaps how you plan your stages.
Right.
And it can be incredibly enriching. And now you notice I'm not saying but to any of this. It's and you do need to have some conversations about what your expectations are and how it will go.
Yeah, including things like, so if you've got bad blisters and I don't, right? Or if I'm okay to walk in the pouring rain, but you'd rather take a cab or whatever, that we need freedom to make some free choices to, and yet, stay together, that sort of thing. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's a those are all really good things to talk about. A lot of times we think that we do have to do the stages together. We have to walk to the same place for coffee break together, walk at the same pace.
Right.
But I have even heard of friends who would say, "Well, I'll meet you in 3 days.
Right.
So, I'm stopping here. Yeah, you don't want to stop here? Okay, no problem. I'll see you in 3 days in this town."
Yeah.
So it's really interesting to sort of get out of that box of we're doing this together and what
Right.
is the together part of it?
Yeah. And I think at this point, we're both anticipating that we're going to stay in the same places and probably have evening meals together and so on. But I think we're both open to, if that changes along the way, it changes along the way.
Yeah.
One of my motivations for having him along, and like what that I saw in the Andrew McCarthy novel as well, is at 17 and my 21-year-old son as well, like they're at that stage where they got the whole life ahead of them. Everybody asks them all the time, so what are you going to do with your life? All they can think about is, hey, I survived the pandemic going to high school in it. Stop asking me long-term goal questions. And I just relish the idea of them having, and of my 17-year-old son Stephen having extended downtime, having conversations with people from all over the world about, like, not surface stuff like, hey, what did you think about, that sports game or that concert or, that TikTok video? But like, what's your purpose for being out here? And where's your life going? And what do you think and feel? Like, my sense is that more easily than in our day-to-day lives here, that people on the Camino get into conversations that are very intentional and deep more quickly. That's my sense from stories that I've heard people say. I wonder if that's some of the Camino magic or what, whatever you want to call it. Yeah.
Yeah, well, the question is that the Camino magic, or is that something that happens on the Camino that we just say feels magical? That, like, I can't access that anyplace else, or probably more accurately, I haven't yet accessed that anyplace else. So
Right.
we get to experience it for the first time on the Camino. And yeah, let's go ahead and call that Camino magic. But you don't have to lose the Camino magic when you leave the Camino.
Right. Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Right. I keep on hearing things about, when the Camino actually starts, right? So I
Yeah.
recently heard you were interviewing, I think her name was Kate, talking about the Camino starts in Santiago, right? And I've heard other people talk about how the Camino starts as soon as you start planning. And other people are like, you asked me, so let's put a pin in the map. Mine starts in Porto. Like, it starts in so many different places, but we're all on Camino all the time. Right? We're all on this journey all the time. And so like I can see that the Camino has already started for me because it's helped me to be super intentional about all kinds of things that I'm thinking about. And I can see that, it's not like I'm going to get home and okay, that's done. Cool. Get it off the bucket list. We're done. Yeah. So I'm really hoping that for Stephen too, that some of the bigger questions that he has about, his unique place in life and that he can play around with some of those things. Yeah.
What a wonderful opportunity for someone at age 17.
Oh man, my goodness.
That's incredible. I like that you mentioned the bucket list idea, and it's one that every time I hear the phrase bucket list, I have to go, wait a minute, hold on. How does something get on your bucket list? And I always want to see, let's look at the whole list and see how they compare. So is seeing the Eiffel Tower on par with walking the Camino de Santiago? You know,
what are
those things? And it seems to me that the Camino has such a tremendous potential to be that lifelong process and that lifelong journey that you mentioned.
Yeah, like we don't typically put together communities of people who've been to the Eiffel Tower and have gatherings back home. But there is a Canadian Camino Society, and there's a local Kitchener-Waterloo chapter. And yeah, so there is something different.
That's a great point.
About the intention.
Sure. Sure.
Yeah, it's not a bucket. I mentioned bucket list as if to say it's not a bucket list thing.
Right, right. And I love this discussion about it. I love to think about, wow, why are we even calling it this?
Right.
Yeah, very good. Oh, gosh. So when we think about your son, this is a significant time in his life. You said he's graduating high school?
He graduated high school a year early. That was one of the things. Early in school, he found academics very easy, and so he accelerated a year. And so he got done high school a year early, took a gap year. But even that gap year, he's like, Dad, I'm way too young to go to university. I don't know what I want to do with my life. So we're just trying to give him a little more gap.
What a gift. Mm. Yeah, what a gift. So let's think about your Camino then. So this will be the Camino within the Camino. So there's when we look at it and we go, okay, father, son, walking the Camino. If you were to track back to what pulled at your heartstrings or at your spirit or however we want to articulate it, what was it that grabbed you and said, you're walking the Camino? And what are you looking for at this time?
Yeah. I'll talk about two minor ones first and then the major one.
The big one. All right.
There's really three strands of it for me. One is physically, right? I'm 58 years old and I'm like, I had not been in great physical health. There were a number of indicators like heart and alcohol consumption, a lot of Camino stuff that just kind of went off the rails and stuff like that, that was just not where it should have been, right? And so it was like, I needed a reset physically. And last year, I tried to do the same thing in January, February of 2023. And I didn't have I had a long-term big ontological goal. Like I want to be there for my wife, my grandchildren and everything else. But I didn't have a short-term goal that I could like keep on measuring toward. Mm-hmm. And physically preparing, training, walking, exercising, really being conscious about diet and much more body conscious and everything else in a healthy way has been a really important reset for me as I think about, you know, my transition into retirement years and being a grandfather who gets down on the floor with his grandchildren and stuff like that to play. So that was the physical reset was a really, really important one. The second one is travel. Like I love to travel and I love planning travel. So we do a lot of traveling with, my wife, her two sisters and their husbands, and the six of us, we often go together. Myself and my other sister-in-law, we do all the planning, and I love traveling because I love experiencing other cultures. I'm sort of a Rick Steves through the back door kind of traveler. But last year we went to Croatia, Slovenia, and Bosnia, which was phenomenal.
Wow.
And every morning I got up earlier than everyone else. And before the cities, whatever city we were in was like Sarajevo, Dubrovnik, wherever we were, small towns. And I'd get up early and just go scouting for a bake shop that was open and try to get like some fresh croissants or whatever to bring back for breakfast. And then I'd get back, everybody'd be waking up. And I have all these pictures of the city with empty streets, right?
Oh, wow. That sounds so fantastic.
Oh, it was, yeah, it awakened something in me that I just love doing. I love exploring. I'm not very good at looking in the past, but I love looking into the future.
Oh, okay. That's a great distinction.
Yeah. My wife once in a while will say, I don't have a rear view mirror. I only have, you know, it would help me to have a better rear view mirror, but I do love exploring. And so the travel piece is a really, so the idea of walking, you know, through these villages and doing it at a walking pace, mm-hmm. At a human pace is just really important. So that's the fun side for me. I'm really looking forward to that. And then I was realizing, so I'm 58 years old, and I was realizing that I've lived my adult life since I was 18 in 10-year epochs, right? So for 10 years, I worked in business From 18 to 28, and then from 28 to about 38, I was in school full time, becoming a pastor, serving at a church in Michigan, living in Michigan for that decade. And then I served a church in Ontario, Canada, in Cambridge, and did that and enjoyed that. And then over the last 10 years, we spent 1 year as missionaries in Haiti first. Mm-hmm. Just sort of learn as a family how to live on mission. And then over the last 9 years now, we've been planting a house-based church, a non-programmatic, non-paying the pastor a salary type church, where I've been working full-time as a realtor in order to earn an income. Mm. And so, and we're sort of like at the 10-year mark of that. And so I'm like, oh, wait a minute. If I look at the quote unquote script of my life and I look back, not very good at it, but I try looking back, I must be on the verge of another big change. But I'm not moving. I'm not changing jobs. But there are big changes happening for me as I think about and plan for retirement, some of those getting physically ready for it, some of those, you know, making sure that I'm in the right place financially and everything else, able to help my children. But there's also in the landscape of the Christian church that I've served, like in denominationally, there's just so many things that have happened. And, you know, I used to happily identify as a Christian, right? And as a pastor, I am still very much a Jesus follower, but calling myself a Christian and saying that in the current context, maybe even more so in Canada than in the US, because we're maybe a little more pluralistic and post-Christian than you are in the US. But some of the things are the way, you know, the church and politics and everything else have gotten mixed up, the way the church has handled some political issues. I'm just like, there are big changes happening, and I need to do a good long ponder and prayer and listening to the voices of people from all over the world and whatever the Spirit wants to do with that in order to lead me for the next chapter, right? Or the chapter I'm already in.
Ah, yes. Yes, because you've already started it.
Yeah.
Would you mind just stepping back and exploring a couple of the things that you said? You mentioned pluralistic and post-Christian. Would you explain a little bit more about what that means in this context?
Sure. So like, in broader North American evangelicalism, there's this idea, myth, I would say, that we live in a Christian nation, the U.S., or that Canada was at one point a Christian nation, right? But that the idea that Christianity holds a center place in power and politics and everything else, that that's moving to the wayside. And one of the ways we see that happening in the U.S. is sort of the... Boy, I'm going too far down a bit of a political rabbit hole. So there was an era where the Christian church was central in culture, right? You wanted to become the president in the U.S. You had to sort of say, you know, declare not only that you're not Catholic kind of thing, but that you're a Christian and this is the church you go to. And that used to be true in Canada as well. But a lot of those assumptions are no longer. Like, that's historic, right? In Canada, even more so, we would identify as more of a pluralistic country in terms of our culture, that we celebrate all humanity. We celebrate that everybody has or expresses faith in some different way, and that there's validity to that, right? And some Christians see sort of post-Christianity and pluralism as bad news. And some Christians see it as an exciting time of unshackling from imperialism and being in bed with politics and everything else, right? So we're in a different era.
Okay.
Yeah. Boy, what else do I want to say about that?
Well, I really appreciate the further discussion because it seems to me that so many things are evolving and so many things are coming up right in front of our faces to determine where we stand on them. And right. So I think it is an interesting time, and to be able to take that and to take those questions to the global community, which is who you encounter on the Camino. That's just really an interesting perspective.
Yeah. Yeah. I would say that as a Jesus follower, I would believe that the Spirit is at work everywhere, and that every person created is somebody who bears some part of the greater story. And so I can learn from anyone, right? And I don't have to be threatened by that. I can be excited about and wonder about what is God doing right now in this conversation. And I don't have to worry about where the power is, right? And whether I'm winning or losing a debate or an argument, it's not about that.
Yeah, it really isn't. Yeah. And I'm trying to imagine pilgrims walking on the trail and getting into these discussions. And there's something to me, it seems the movement of walking and the rhythm of walking, maybe that frees us up to be more open. I don't know. So it's something to explore.
Right. Yeah, I wonder about that too. You know, the stereotypical thing for men is, you know, you can't get them to talk to each other unless they're sitting beside each other in a vehicle and just looking ahead, right? And maybe there's a thing with walking that way too, right? That you don't have to stare each other in the face, but you're on a journey together. And I think that's that notion is being on a journey is really important. This morning I was driving around, and I don't know if you have this where you're from, but all over Southern Ontario, there's all kinds of little towns and hamlets and stuff like that. And you can tell where the old highway used to go, and now the new big bypass kind of goes around it, right? And all over the place, you've got like old Highway 2 or old Highway 99 or whatever it is, right? And I keep on thinking that like we're all on this journey, and so many of the old structures of the journey, spiritual, religious, whatever you want to call it, are not working for a lot of people. Mm-hmm. And they're not taking that path anymore, but they're still on a spiritual journey. So I'm really intrigued by what I'm going to say when I get to Santiago and I hand in my, what's the little thing called?
The credencial.
When I hand in my credencial and they say, so what was your purpose? And like, I'm going to say spiritual because everything is spiritual. Like, uh-huh. Right? Like, yeah. So I feel like a big part of this chapter that I'm in is trying to figure out how do I shift from a religiously motivated faith to a spiritually motivated faith.
So if you were to answer that question right now, what would you say?
I think I would say that a spiritually motivated faith is an actual walk of faith.
What does that mean?
For me, what that means is, like, I look back on my own journey, and I spent a decade and a half, almost two decades, being employed by churches who paid me a salary and benefits to stand in front of them and talk about how to live by faith, which was like kind of ironic that they were making it possible for me to not need to live by faith because they were paying me a salary. And just in this last decade where I've learned to like be an entrepreneur and figure out how do I earn an income for myself without worrying about somebody else taking care of me, it's become a walk of faith. And I think for me personally, that's a metaphor for the way in which my faith walk is becoming it's less shaped by the institutions of religion and more shaped by the actual journey that I'm on.
It reminds me of something I often tell first-time pilgrims is when you get ready for the Camino, you've got the guidebooks and the apps and the videos, and you think that's the Camino. And then when you get there, you've got the app in your hand or you've got the guidebook. But I encourage people to look at the experience and what's actually happening.
Right.
And trust that over the guidebook, over the app.
Right.
That is the journey. What is happening before you, around you, and within you, rather than the ideas that you had a few minutes ago about what it is.
Mm. And that means that you get to take the Camino way past Compostela, right?
That's how that happens.
Would the guidebook stop there?
Yeah.
Right? But the transformation continues.
Perfect.
Right?
Perfectly said. Yes.
Huh.
There's something to ponder.
Yeah, I got lots of pondering going on.
Yes, it seems like every time we approach a milestone birthday, all the pondering comes right back out.
Well, and that's the funny thing. I'm 58. I'm not even approaching a milestone birthday, but I'm just like, I'm at that. Okay. Yeah. Am I?
You're getting a head start because it's a couple years away. Yeah.
Right, right,
And
right.
And me too. Me too. I'll hit 60 next year. I think I'm 59 this year and 60 next year. But yeah, that milestone birthday always goes, hold on, we better evaluate and make sure that we're doing everything we want to be doing. I also just attended a memorial service or celebration of life for the daughter of a friend of mine. And it just, as I was sitting there listening, I'm thinking, am I getting the most out of this ride? Am I getting the most out of this life? And if not, what do I want to do about that?
That's right.
So let's just say, for example, you only get one Camino. Maybe you'll get to go back and walk the Frances route, a full 800 kilometer Camino. But if this is the only one, what will you do to make this the Camino for you? And what would that even mean?
So that's a tricky question, because I have to admit, I am walking this assuming that someday I'll walk the big one.
I love the way you said that.
Why? Because I'm feeling like this one isn't the big one?
No, just the idea that the other one is the big one. And what makes it the big one? Because it's longer, because it will take more time, because there's a greater potential for transformation or connection or magic. What makes it the big one?
Because it's longer. Because it's longer, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And it is a mountain of time off work, especially when you're an entrepreneur. So it's like, I don't know how I'll be able to do that while I'm working and whether I have to wait till I'm fully retired. And so, but how do I make this the Camino? I think in the sense that the Camino starts when you commit to going, there, like, even if I broke my ankle on the day before I was going to go, right, and I couldn't go on the Camino this year, I will have already been Caminoing, you know, if that's a verb, right? Like,
it is a verb.
Yeah. Like, a lot of my preparation mentally, physically has happened. Like, you know, I mentioned earlier on that one of my goals was physical, to get myself in better physical shape. And so my backpack is 16 pounds loaded with like an extra pair of shoes and everything else.
That's impressive.
But that is half of the weight that I've lost so far. And so I feel like on the health piece, like, so many pieces have already changed, right? Like, my heart rate is down, my sleeping is better, like, all kinds of things are really good. I've been thinking a lot about the pace of my life and how I walk. And, you know, early on, when I was talking about doing this, and my wife and I were talking about it, and she was saying she would love to do something like this someday, but it would be way different than me. And I said, well, how's that? And she said, well, first of all, I'd want to stay in like luxury places every night and just you and I, and not in like an auberge with all kinds of people snoring and, you know, whatever other sounds they make in the night. And then I'd want to send my luggage ahead every day. I wouldn't want to carry it. So I'd want to plan every day. And for me, I'm like, I planned a few, but I want to just kind of walk it out. Right.
Yeah.
And so where was I going with this thought?
Oh, you were talking about when the Camino does actually start, when you get going, when you say yes to it, what are the implications of that?
Right. And so one of the things for Carol is, my wife, is she's a much slower walker than I am. Like, when we go for a walk in the neighborhood, she's like constantly like, slow down, slow down. And she's actually, when she goes walking with her neighborhood friends, she's always like, that's not a fast pace for her. She can walk a lot faster, right? But anyway, so part of the Camino for me is just thinking about my own pace. So, like, one of the questions I wanted to ask you was, when you're walking along and you're a relatively fast-paced walker yourself, and then you see ahead a group of other pilgrims and they're walking at a slower pace, do you just pass them and say, "Buen camino," or do you slow down and talk to them? Yeah, so maybe that's first my question. How would you respond?
Yeah, and you'll discover that when you're there, you'll know the right answer depending on who you're coming up on. So if it's people you know you're going to slow down, or people maybe you've seen who you haven't talked to, but you want to talk to, you slow your pace to match theirs. If you are intent on keeping your pace, it's easy enough to just say, "Hola, buen camino," or when you're in Portugal, whatever it is in Portuguese, and be friendly and wave and see you at the next town or something along those lines. Sometimes you'll get in with people, you'll match their pace for a while, and then you want to speed up and leave them behind. And so that's another chance where you can have just a short little conversation, and then you just let them know, "I'm going to walk ahead now. And thank you. It was a pleasure meeting you. Thank you for the conversation," whatever pleasantries you would say, and then you speed up and continue on. "See you at the next town," something like that.
Yeah, so that was like a pace question in the middle of answering your question about like how will this be the Camino for me? I don't think there's any repairing the damage that the Camino's already done to me, even though I haven't yet started my first quote unquote step. So I think it's already real.
Yeah, I love the way you said that. And what it brings up for me is we can ask the question, does the Camino start when you say yes? But I like the question better, if the Camino starts when you say yes, what are you going to do with it? We don't know if it does or not, but if it does, what will that mean to you? How will you spend your time from now until you take your first steps on the trail? What level of mindfulness do you want to cultivate? What spiritual practices do you want to engage now?
What listening, habits of slowing and of rest, and and so that's what, like, one of the complications of walking with my 17-year-old son is that what's going on in me is not necessarily going on in him in terms of pacing. And so that'll be part of walking that out in community, right? And
Absolutely. Yeah. And in conversation and communication. One of my favorite practices on the Camino is to, people think I'm crazy, to stop to have a drink of water. So instead of having the hose and the, what is it called, the tube from the bladder, and you just sip, sip, sip as you go, or to pull the bottle out of the pocket of the backpack, to actually stop, maybe sit down, maybe stretch, have a sip of water, enjoy, but definitely to stop anytime I want to eat. So I don't eat and walk at the same time. And I started doing that on the Camino. So if I want to have a snack, I actually stop and have a snack. And how many times do I not do that at home, where I'm driving and having a snack, or I'm sitting at my desk and I'm working on the computer or doing some editing and I'm eating while I'm doing it? That changes the pace of the day to actually stop and do what you're doing. So when you're eating, eat. When you're walking, walk. When you're sitting, sit. And it just changes the level of mindfulness around those tasks. And you can start that now.
I could. And the like, I love your example, because I am sort of like, I was actually feeling really clever about the way that I've got my water bottle on my strap, on my backpack and everything else, and so that I can walk while I'm drinking and stuff like that. But your idea of stopping, especially if you're solo at that moment, is really easy. If you're in community, it's like, so now do I stop to drink and everybody else just keeps on walking, and now I'm 30 steps behind them or 4 behind them or whatever it is? And all those things will be questions I don't need answers for today.
So what you can conclude from what I described is that I often walk alone on the trail. And it's because my pace is not very fast. I am a rambler. I am the person that stops and takes the photos and stops to adjust my laces and stops to drink water and have a snack and look at the flowers. And so I often just walk alone because that's simpler because for me, it sometimes feels awkward if I need to stop and the person that's with me feels they need to stop as well. And it's really awkward to go, no, keep walking. I want to stop and do what I want to do. And so I end up walking alone sort of intentionally.
Right.
Not so much when I'm leading a group. You find your rhythm. And what I think is powerful about that is so many people, and I'll generalize and say women maybe more than men, we are used to adapting our pace and our needs to other people's. And for many people, this is the first time when they actually get to flex that muscle for however many days they're walking and to say, no, right now, I want to stop. Right now, I want to have a snack. Right now, I want to sit still. And for many people, it's the first time they get to flex that power. I don't mean it in a dominating power, but that ability to set your own pace and your own schedule. And when you practice it on the Camino, like practicing anything, you get good at it. And then we can take that home and go, you know what? I actually think I can set my own pace now.
Right. That's empowering.
Mm.
And it's also for me as a white male who's used to power in unhealthy ways. And now I learn as a faster walker who will have different options than a slow walker, because a fast walker can say, see ya, I'm walking. A slow walker has a harder time saying, see ya, you're walking.
Yes.
Right? So I have to guard my power now that way on the trail I'm thinking about, right?
Well, that's a level of awareness that you already have brought to this.
Mm.
And so to me, that enhances the experience because you're thinking about it consciously. And you're looking at the impact of if I do this or if I do that, what's the potential impact to you? And by impact, I mean benefit. What will
right.
you get out of slowing down to talk to people or having, you know, if you're deep in thought and you're pondering something really important and you don't want to slow down, those are some really good choices to make.
Right. And in the middle of all of that, to be asking myself why,
mm-hmm.
like, why do I want to go fast here? What is my motivation for slowing? And
yeah.
Mm.
Yeah. And here's the fun thing. When you're on the Camino, you're walking for 4 to 6 to 8 hours a day. Your right. mind has to do something. So you may as well give it something good to think about.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I'm not worried about running out of things. My brain never stops and I won't need earbuds or I'll probably bring earbuds just to once in a while have something to put in like music or something like that. But I mostly just want to hear the actual sounds around me.
I'm with you on that one. And for safety, that's a good idea as well. We do need to be able to hear cyclists when they come up behind us. We also need
right.
to be able to hear motor traffic on the roads if we're close to or crossing roads.
Right, right.
That's one of my trail safety tips.
Yeah, no, that's a good tip. That's a great tip. Yeah.
So what else would you like to share with us about your Camino plans and what you have in mind?
Yeah. So back to the journey with my son.
Yeah.
Right? Like he's 17. So there's he's a bright kid and he's able and sociable and all of that. He won't have difficulty, but I'll still have a sense of responsibility for him, right? We're in foreign country.
Yeah. Yes.
And so I won't always physically be where he is and, you know, thinking about that. And I want to have my Camino and let him have his and be there for him, but not be in his way. And so I keep on wondering about what is going to be the challenge of calibrating my and my son's trips as we have different desires for waking, different walking paces. I'm pretty fast. I've been training with my pack on and I'm very comfortably going long distances at 5 kilometers an hour. And that's very comfortable I could go faster, but 5 is very comfortable for me.
Okay.
And he goes faster. Like he's going like 6 or 7 and it's not a problem at all.
Wow.
And so like I can see that we'll kind of be like the tortoise and the hare on the trail, right? I don't even know what question I'm asking, except like, do you have any wisdom for how do you calibrate that? And how do you relax as a dad or a parent about that?
First thing I have to say is you're asking someone who doesn't have children. So I'm not going to have the perspective of a parent.
Yep. Okay.
Yeah, I'll say that first. What I would then look at is if I were walking with a friend with a dramatically different pace, I wouldn't be asking my friend things like, how do you stay safe? And do you know this about the world? That kind of thing. But what I might do is come up with a plan for breaks and for the end of the day. So do we know where we're stopping today? Are we stopping in the same place? And how will we check in to know that we're there? So maybe you want to request that he sends you a message on WhatsApp when he arrives in town and gets checked into where you're staying, just so you have the peace of mind to know my kid's there. He made it. Same with breaks. It might be, you know what, Stephen, speed on up, keep your pace. And then today, will you wait for me at this town so we can have a coffee together? And right. Then, you know, whatever you feel comfortable setting those boundaries for your safety needs, you know, for you to feel secure as a parent. I would do the same thing with my friends.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we're going to this town today and this is where we're staying. This is there. Maybe there are a few places to stay in town. This is where we're staying. Let me know when you get there. And if you can save a bed for me, or if I have to hustle and get there before they sell out, you know, so those kinds of questions. And that way you involve him in the actual responsible part of being on the Camino, which is securing food and beds throughout the journey.
So if he gets to like a municipal or parochial albergue before I do, can he reserve a bed for me, or it depends?
I would say some yes, some no. Yeah, it could be different at every one.
Yeah.
One trick you could try, and again, I'm not saying this from the position of an hospitalera who knows that this works, but one trick you can try is you can have him take your credencial, and when he gets there, check you both in and say, I don't know how many places will allow you to do that, but you could certainly try that. You might also have a difference when you're in Portugal versus when you're in Spain. I don't know how those different facilities operate. Yes.
Okay.
And I bet some of my listeners are going, here's what you do.
Okay.
Yeah. So if anybody's listening and has some strategies for how to do that, send them to me and I'll send them out in my weekly email so people can collect those strategies. Yeah. For how to do that. So just to include him in the thinking process and the planning process and the problem solving process. For me, my first two Caminos were all about problem solving, figuring out how things work and how to streamline it. My head leans towards efficiency. I try to improve everything.
Right.
And so that's what I was doing on my first two Caminos, but you can put him on that. All right, let me know how this works. I'm behind you, right? I'm not far behind you, but I'm behind you. Let me know how this works. And then he can take that role perhaps.
Right, right.
Or something similar. He'll find his role and what his strengths are and what he wants to bring to it.
That's good. That's good. Yeah, let him adult. Yeah. Yeah. Cool. And then the other, like, this is sort of, I think this is like a May, September question.
Okay.
But maybe it's a June, July question. Congestion on the Camino. How do you, like, I love people, don't get me wrong, but I don't want to walk in a pack. So how do you avoid congestion? Just when you see a pack, just let them go on ahead of you, or any tips there for?
Yeah. So I think walking fast is going to work in your favor because an individual will more likely move faster than a group. So when people are in a pack, they often are having conversations and they're more focused on the conversation than on making good time. And so I imagine that in many cases you will pass the group and just walk on by, buen camino, got to go by. Yeah. And you'll be ahead of them pretty quickly. For slower people, just so that those who are slower and are listening have a strategy, that's me, by the way. What I often will do is I will wait until a little bit later to start walking, let everybody get out of town before me. And then I come up behind.
Right.
Because I have, it's a weird thing. I don't like to have people behind me when I'm walking on the trail. It's the same way when I'm driving, when I'm on a country road, if someone comes up behind me, even if they're not pushing me to go faster, I still pull over and let them go. I don't need to be the one to hold up anybody. And so that's how I walk as well. Now, some people are on the other end. They want to be the first person out of town and they want no one in front of them.
Right.
And so you find your rhythm. Surprisingly, you just find what feels right for you. One of my favorite Camino experiences from the last couple of years, I was leaving Puerto Marin on the Frances route, which is just after Saria, and a group of Spanish people, Spanish high school kids, or maybe early college kids came up behind me. It was a group of 50. And I had been at a bar the night before, working inside the bar on my computer, and they were out on the terrace making all kinds of noise. And they were having so much fun that you can't be mad at young people for having fun. So I'm like, yeah, break out the music. And so instead of grumbling about it, I went, ah, let's have it. And then the next morning, that was the group that came up behind me, 50 of them just coming up behind me. And I went, oh my word, wow. I don't want them behind me. So I pulled over and let them go. And then I got to interact with the back of the group. There were about six of the young people who I got to interact with. They were walking with Spanish flags and they were playing and wearing them as capes and having all kinds of fun. And some of them spoke really good English. And so we got to have a conversation. And then they had me take photos of them and we just had a fine time. And then I never saw them again because they were faster than me.
That's yeah, right. Huh.
So my thing is embrace whatever comes and there yeah. just might be a gift in it.
Right, right. Yeah. Cool.
Yeah. Wow. All right. So questions I can answer for you? Anything else?
Yeah. My other question was, so I keep on going back and forth. Like so my original plan was, you know, I'd read about the two sock method. I'd read about, you know, two different pairs of shoes. I've gotten myself the, the anatomical socks, right? So a left and a right sock and different thicknesses and different size shoes for the afternoon and for the morning and one waterproof pair and one non-waterproof pair and so on. So that's been my plan all along, right?
Okay.
And now I'm getting closer to the time that I'm going to go. And I'm like, oh, instead of having two pairs of shoes, should I maybe just go down to one pair of shoes so I don't have to carry that second pair of shoes? And if so, which one? And so like, how do you solve the dilemma of your foot strategy? I very much don't want to have any blisters or anything like that. And I'm committed to doing whatever care, including greasing up my feet in the morning, changing my socks at coffee time and at lunch, and you know, switching out my shoes for hot spots if that's what I need to do. But what any more that you could say about foot care, foot management, blister prevention?
Yeah, this comes down to awareness again, is paying attention to what your feet are doing and how they're feeling. And one of the things I said in one of my first podcasts in the series, I asked the question, can you reach your feet? Because you're going to be working on them every day. Right. But the thing is, with first-time pilgrims and second, third, fourth, fifth-time pilgrims, there's this idea that we've got to get it right the first time. I didn't get my footwear right for 7 years.
Oh,
I fortunately didn't get blisters, but my feet always hurt. At the end of every day, my feet hurt.
Mm.
So what I would encourage people to do is to not so much worry about getting it right, but to be aware of what's happening with your feet and address things quickly if they do happen.
Right.
And hopefully you'll get it right. Hopefully you'll have the exact right shoes and the right socks and the right foot care, but just pay attention to your feet and make sure that you've walked in whatever shoes you're going to walk in, that you've done it with your fully loaded backpack, built up, so not from 0 to 16 pounds in one hike, but gradually add 3-4 pounds at a time on your training hikes, gradually ease into it and get your boots so that your body is comfortable. The muscles in your legs are used to working with those boots. It's not so much of a problem for men, I don't think, but often women, we wear heels, even if it's 1-inch, 2-inch, 3-inch heels, that is a different experience for the legs and the hips than a flat right. hiking shoe. So whatever it is, just move into them 2 weeks before you leave and wear them all the time so your body's used to them, and then just be aware.
Yeah.
And that's the best anybody can do.
So it sounds like, especially if I'm thinking this is my first Camino, even though it's my real Camino, that leaving myself the options and staying with my original plan of two pairs of shoes and multiple pairs of socks, and that gives me more tools to work with. And worst case scenario, I burn a pair of shoes somewhere on the trail or send them ahead, right?
Yeah. If you're willing to carry the weight. Yeah. I have a dear friend who did that. She took two pairs of shoes and just switched them out. She carried her backpack. She switched them out, carried the weight, switched them out. No blisters for her. And so I'll be on the Camino in May and I am debating in my packing process, do I take two pairs? Do I take a waterproof pair and a not waterproof pair? And it's going to come down to what fits in my luggage.
Okay. So that's a debate that you're still having.
It is. Yeah. Because I've done it both ways. I've gone waterproof only. I've gone not waterproof only. And I've taken both. And so I'm just undecided right now.
So my concern about waterproof only is that they get too warm and I create hotspots because I can't ventilate.
Yeah, they do get warm. That is definitely a potential hazard. And then that's where, in my mind, it's so important to take the break every hour. Sit down, stretch your lower back, stretch your legs, stretch your calves, and switch out your socks. Let your feet air out on the trail. Yeah. It's not a fast-paced thing if you do it that way. If you're looking to just get the day done, it's not how you do it. But I love being on the trail.
Yeah, when I'm walking, I want to be fast. When I'm on a break, I'm on a break.
I like that attitude.
Yeah. The only other question that I had was related, I mean, I could ask. Okay, I'm going to ask this one too, because May, poncho versus rain jacket. So I've got a good rain jacket. It's lightweight and everything else. But now I'm looking at May and, you know, it's going to be like 22 degrees or something like that, potentially 18, you know, that's pretty warm when you're walking.
Yeah. Yeah. For people with Fahrenheit, that's around 70.
Right. And so I'm second guessing whether I want to bring a rain jacket and instead just bring a poncho. But like, what do you?
Yeah. So the answer, you might not like this, is the same as the shoe. You might get it right. It might work perfectly. It might not.
Okay.
Personally, I use a rain jacket and rain pants. And the reason I do that is because I find that a rain jacket is more functional overall when traveling. So when I'm in Madrid for 3 days, or I'm going to London for 3 days at the beginning of my trip this time, I'm not going to walk around London in a poncho. And I travel a lot. So I always need to have a rain jacket somewhere. So for me, the right choice from a wardrobe perspective was to have the rain jacket and rain pants.
Right.
Strictly as a pilgrim, many people will swear by the functionality of a poncho, that it goes over absolutely everything in one go. You're covered, you're protected from the rain, job's done.
Okay.
Again, it's just, we could debate both sides of the argument and we would all be right.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And I guess my strategy originally was I want to take the rain jacket because if the mornings start out cool, rather than having another layer, the jacket functions as a jacket.
I'm glad you mentioned that because that's the other thing that I use it for.
Okay.
And especially if it's cold and I have, let's say my fleece is a thin fleece. It's my,
right.
That's my layer for warmth.
Yeah.
I also have a puffy jacket that's not brand new. So it's not as warm as it used to be, but I know I can put on my rain jacket, and the nature of the fabric of a rain jacket is that it's going to keep some of the heat in. So I do know I've got that working in my favor. So I'm not too worried about those other pieces because I know my jacket is nice and extra layer of warmth.
Right. That's really good. That's really good.
But again, do you get it right? I don't know.
And then maybe my last question, and this might be just some stubborn independence on me. I can't imagine walking with walking poles.
Okay.
I'm a terrible dancer. I can't figure out the rhythm and stuff like that. So the idea of trying to figure out where to put these poles, and it just feels like, why would I go through the work of doing that? And then my hands are busy. I read about people advocating for poles, and once you use them, you never stop using them, and how it takes the weight off and distributes and blah, blah, blah. Are there people who never use poles in their 50s, 60s, and they're like perfectly fine?
Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah.
Absolutely. I use poles because I have knee problems.
Okay. Right.
And I want to have the poles, especially on the downhill, for the balance, and also so that I can put some of my weight pressure onto my hands. So poles do essentially three things. I'm very much oversimplifying this, and this is not scientific. Poles will help you with balance. When you have a backpack on, your center of gravity shifts a little bit. And so the poles just give you two more things hitting the earth that will keep you in balance. If you start to slip, you can push one of those poles into the ground and stop yourself from falling. The other thing it does is when you go uphill, you push the poles behind you, and then you're using your upper body to propel yourself up the hill. uses your core strength to propel you up the hill. And then the third thing, as I just mentioned, is going down the hill. I think of it as a portable banister or a braking system to slow me down when gravity's trying to suck me down the hill. And again, my knees really appreciate that. The thing is, with poles, if you are comfortable using them, if you're able to practice and get your rhythm and feel good about them, then use them. If you don't, then don't. I think the thing is, again, to be aware of your body and where your strength points are, where maybe any weaknesses are in your body, and to focus on strengthening your body above using the poles. And then the poles can be an addition. And then the other thing that I always say about poles is to learn how to use them to your best benefit, because there are plenty of things that you can do with poles. You can set them long and short. You can use the straps or let the straps be decorative. Lots of options. But in my experience, if you learn how to use the straps correctly so that they actually add to the control of the poles, and if you set them so that they're not too high, see, when you have poles that are too high, you have to expend energy to lift the pole with every step. Right. And you don't want that. You want the poles to be at a height so that it's more of a natural, well, it's just what my arms were going to do anyway, and swing them along. That 90-degree rule where people say bend your arm so that your arm is at a 90-degree. I'm saying this so wrong, but I hope people know what I mean.
The bottom of your arm is parallel to the earth?
Thank you. That's exactly what I meant. So that actually, in my mind, is too high, because when it's set at that point, I have to lift the poles with every step. And that's 3 more inches of lifting than I really need to do. And so when you're walking 6 hours a day, that actually takes a little bit more energy. Okay. So when you're going downhill, that's when you want them longer, because then you push them out in front of you and they've got to be longer to reach the ground in front of you.
Okay.
Now, many people don't agree with me, and I completely respect that. So I suggest that you try it out and make the decision for yourself.
And worst comes to worst, you donate a set of poles to somebody who's behind you.
There you go. I'm certain if you were to leave them somewhere, someone would certainly grab them.
That seems to be the case.
Yeah. Very good. So this has been great. I love your questions. I also love your reflections. And I'm not sure that people could tell in the recording, but I was laughing a lot because I just love how you have a very subtle sense of humor that I get. But I want to go to the end of the world now. So you and Stephen have walked from Porto to Santiago de Compostela, and then you've continued on to the end of the world. If you were to guess or anticipate or think through what the significance of those additional 3 to 4, however many days of walking it is, what would you say about those days and about arriving at the end of the world?
Yeah, I wasn't, I wasn't expected to get caught up emotional as we started to think about this and talk about this. So I've got a rock in my pack. I'm not walking the French, so I'm not going to the Iron Cross, but I've got a rock in my pack. And I asked my brother-in-laws, who I normally travel with, to pick that rock out of the Grand River for me a few weeks ago. And so I've got that ready. And I know that as I do my reflecting, I'm going to be, you know, letting go of something when I get to the end of the world, and throwing that rock into the ocean. Or maybe just dropping it. I'm not sure. Anyway, I'm really intrigued about what that's going to mean to me in that moment. And then to be able to look over at my son in the same moment and wonder, you know, about the opportunity that he's getting at his age to drop some kind of rock or, you know, whatever that means. I mean, yeah, we'll be able to say we did it. He'll probably be able to look at me and say, old man, you did it, right? but that's going to be a really special moment. And I think he's very much a homebody as well. So I'll be looking forward to getting home and seeing my wife and rest of our family and so on. And he'll be looking forward to getting home. But I think in that moment, just having completed the journey and yeah. My daughter and her fiance recently traveled to Asia for an extended period. And before they left, they quit their jobs and they were talking about lining up jobs when they got back. And part of that conversation was about, well, it's kind of hard to line up a job for when you get back because you don't really know who you'll be when you get back. And in a much smaller way, but in my own personal way, that'll be true for me too. Like, I don't know who I'm bringing back as me, and I don't know who Steven's bringing back as Steven, right? Yeah, we'll know more about that then, and we don't need to know more about that now, but it's hard to believe.
Just to have the awareness that it could be something different. You could be someone different, or you could be just expressing a different part of you that you weren't familiar with before. And so that's exciting to me. I don't know if that's exciting to everyone, but yeah, just that level of awareness that is possible can be exciting. It can also be a little intimidating or a little nerve-wracking, the idea of who am I going to be? But I suspect, and I'll say this to all of my listeners, I think you're going to like yourself. I think you're going to like who comes back.
Yeah. You know, any time of personal self-reflection helps you to extend a little more grace to yourself for your own foibles. Yes. And also to, you know, shoot yourself some encouragement that you know you need.
Yeah.
So I anticipate that'll be a piece of it. Yeah. And I'll, at the same time, I don't want to set myself up too high to be like, you know, what if I get to the end of this? Like, yeah, that was a cool walk. Let's go home.
Mm-hmm. It could be that.
That's not impossible.
No.
Yeah, whatever is will be good. Be our Camino. And
well, it's a good reminder that you don't have to wait to the end,
right,
for the revelation or for the growth or for the shift or whatever you want to call it. It can come at any time.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or not at all.
Right. And I think it's been coming already. So I'm just looking forward to seeing what more will come.
Yeah, I have a feeling there's more to come. John, thank you so much. I've really enjoyed this conversation.
Oh, my goodness. It's been fantastic.
Safe travels, buen camino to both you and Stephen.
Yeah, you too. Take care.
All right. Bye.